Animal Gab Radio. We've got talk with a tail. Welcome to Animal Gab Radio. I'm Asa Cody, artist, animal advocate, pet chef. This talk with a tail is Oceana Part 2, featuring interviews with the Marine Mammal Stranding Network and Lynn Buckmaster, ocean health advocate.
Hello, I'm Keith Chandler, General Manager of Seaside Aquarium and co-coordinator of the Marine Mammal Stranding Network.
And I'm Tiffany Booth with the Seaside Aquarium. I've been there since 2001. I also help with the Marine Mammal Stranding Network.
The Marine Mammal Stranding Network, it just sounds fascinating to me because it is an opportunity to investigate what is going on our coast. Is that
exactly? We try to investigate all the animals that wash up that have died, and we try to keep humans out of the equation on all the animals that are alive.
Oh, so that's good.
Yeah.
Yes, right, because we do have so much information about people taking animals home, putting them in the bathtub in their motels, you know, taking selfies of them as they're having a problem and so on.
We have far less of the animals in the bathtub than we used to. And I think that has a lot to do with the fact that the education that we do with the public through the network is really starting to work.
Do you have a Facebook page for the network?
But we through the aquarium's website or Facebook site, we post a lot of things.
Okay.
No, I don't. Tiffany posts a lot.
Yes, Tiffany. Okay. And so how would they get in touch with you? So let's say they found a stranded critter on the beach. How would they get in touch with you?
Call us at the Seaside Aquarium.
Okay. And so why don't you give us your number?
It's 503-738-6211.
Okay.
And if you can't remember that, if you find something, you can call your local police department and they'll call us. If you get the name of the Seaside Aquarium, you can call the authorities and they'll call us.
Okay.
But it'd be better to call us direct if you can.
Okay.
But some, you know, after hours, we're not always there.
Right.
So if you can call the police, they have numbers to get a hold of us.
Okay. And so tell me the kind of experiences you've had. What has washed up and demanded your attention lately?
Whales.
Do we get a lot of them on the coast here?
We get, maybe 4 or 5 a year, different kinds of whales.
Oh, does that seem like a lot or is that
normal? Well, it's not that they're coming on shore and dying. Most of them have been dead and floating around and then they just get washed onto shore with the west winds.
I see.
So the fact that we have whales is not a bad thing because, you know, everything that lives dies.
Right.
And so the fact that we have more dead whales means there's more live whales out there.
Oh, well, that's a good thought. Yes, right. And then what is the procedure? What happens?
Well, if they stay put.
The last two whales we've had have come in, and when we've gone to do the necropsy on them, they've washed away, and then they come back later. Maybe they're just a little shy. I'm not sure.
It kind of varies what we can do with the animal depending on its size. A full-grown gray whale or humpback whale is really hard to necropsy. There's a lot of really heavy tissue involved. And that also will depend on the beach location. So if it's Gearhart Beach or Delray Beach, we can get big equipment on the beach to actually work that animal up. But if it's at short sands, like our last large humpback was, we have to carry all of our gear down. So we really can't do a whole lot with those animals there. But we'll do an initial flensing. So basically we go in through the blubber layer and we'll look for evidence of trauma. So we can see if it was maybe hit by a boat or with pinniped seals and sea lions, a lot of times here they've been shot. And so we can see if they've been shot. And we can also tell if some of the injuries that they have, they got either before death or after death. And so with those bigger whales, that's kind of more of what we're looking for, because we're not going to be able to usually go in and get those organs to sample. With the little whales, so we just had a baby gray whale wash up. First in Gearheart and then in Seaside.
Oh, did it wash up and go back out and come back in?
It couldn't make up its mind.
No.
They both have the same zip code, so it was confused.
Yes.
But that one was really interesting because of its size. It was just a little over 10 feet. We were actually able to go inside and we got to take a look at its lungs and its heart and its liver. And it's just a really unique opportunity to get to look at these animals from the inside out, something we wouldn't normally get to see.
And were you able to determine?
We weren't able to determine whether the question with this particular animal, because of the size and the time of year that it washed up, the biggest question was this animal alive or was it a stillborn animal? And from the initial necropsy, we were not able to tell. There was some very different things going on with them. But Daylin, we partner with Portland State University. And so she took all of the samples, basically looking closer at the heart and the lungs, back to PSU. And they're going to analyze them there and see if they can determine whether or not the animal ever took a first breath.
I see. Okay. And are we finding, as we see sometime in Southern California right now, that a lot of seals, for example, are coming ashore undernourished, I mean, to say the least? It seems to be some kind of a problem.
There are a lot of sea lions that are doing that down in California. They have a lot more numbers than we have. I mean, it doesn't seem like that when they're on the docks out here that we have more than you can imagine. But they do rehab down there, and we don't do rehab on pinnipeds up here. Personally, I think that might be part of the problem, because when you rehab unhealthy animals and put them back in, they're still not that healthy.
Mm.
You know, it's kind of nature's way of dealing with sick animals, mm-hmm. is to not have as many.
Right.
And when humans get involved with nature, it messes things up. That's why our mission is to try to keep humans out of the equation and let nature decide. You know, sometimes that's hard to do, but that's the mission we take, and it's a mission I believe in.
You're listening to Animal Gab Radio. So tell us about octopuses on the north coast of Oregon.
The most common in the intertidal zones are the red octopuses, Octopus rubescens, and the giant Pacific octopus. It gets to about 80 pounds here on the Oregon coast. They have a really short lifespan. They only live to be about 3 or 4 years old.
Hmm.
They're a lot like salmon in the way that they spawn and die shortly after.
Do we see them? Will we actually see them, like, curled up on rocks?
They were finding baby cephalopods all over.
Oh.
Yeah. And they were so small, we actually couldn't figure out whether or not they were giant Pacifics or rubescens, because they were probably about the size of a quarter.
Oh.
But they found them, like, for about a month, they were seeing them almost daily in the intertidal zones there. So that was really special.
The Haystack Rock Awareness Program
was
pointing that out to people. They're very hard to see. They camouflage really well. You know, you can be looking at a tide pool and then you see something move and all of a sudden there it is. So you just have
Does it have little, like, tentacles in stage?
Yeah.
But they can
actually change their color to blend in with their surroundings. I mean, from one side to the other. It's pretty amazing. So if you're going tide pooling, just be patient. You know, just take your time and look at stuff, and you might be staring at an octopus and not even know it.
Yeah.
Can we talk about sea turtles?
It is
turtle time of year.
Yeah. Yay, okay.
So you don't think about it on the Oregon coast, but we have sea turtles, and we have sea turtles at the worst time of year.
What does that mean?
So when the currents are coming from the south, we have this warm water current that runs off the Oregon coast in the winter called the Davidson Current, and it comes up from California. and the sea turtles can hang out in this current, and they're just fine. But when we get these big winter storms where we have wind just howling out of the south, and it brings that current way up north, and then all of a sudden the winds switch and howl out of the west, it actually pushes those poor little turtles out of that warm current and into our colder water. They get cold stunned, and they kind of float around. And hopefully for them, the west wind continues, because then they'll actually find themselves on the beach. And if they find themselves on the beach, we're actually able, hopefully, to get to them in time, and we can pick them up and get them to a rehab facility. Last year on the Oregon coast, we had 10 sea turtles come through, five of which we responded to. And then two actually made it down to San Diego for rehabilitation.
When they hit the beach, they have two strikes against them, because they're hypothermic and they've been beat around by the winds coming through the surf. So the sooner we can get to them to do kind of triage to get them to facilities to rehab, the better.
Okay.
And if anyone sees a turtle, they may not think it's alive, because they get so lethargic, it's really hard to tell the difference if they're dead or alive. So we need to know as soon as possible.
So if someone sees them,
call the aquarium.
Yes, and then number is?
503-738-6211.
Okay.
Or the local police departments.
Right.
Because, again, they have our information if the aquarium is closed.
Okay. Well, all thank right. you very kindly for coming. I really You're appreciate welcome. It. Thanks.
It's nice talking to you.
The Seaside Aquarium is 80 years old. Happy birthday to all staff, sea creatures, and seals. To find links for the Marine Mammal Stranding Network, Haystack Rock Awareness Program, Wildlife Center of the North Coast, and Cry Me an Ocean Facebook page, go to animalgabradio.com. My next guest is Lynn Buckmaster, environmentalist and ocean health advocate, with particular concern over the effects of plastic on marine animals. Please welcome my guest, Lynn Buckmaster.
Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you so much, Aza, for having me.
You're well,
it's
my pleasure.
Really important
indeed.
To get the word out.
Thank yes, you. It is. Well, so let's talk a little bit on the state of the ocean, since we live right next to it. This should be something that concerns us all the time and every day.
Absolutely. Now, we hear a lot about global warming and more now about acidification and some about how we're suffocating the ocean, too. But we don't really hear that much, and certainly not on mainstream media, about the plastic pollution problem in the ocean.
Why is that, do you think?
And there are probably about 525 trillion pieces of plastic floating on the surface of the water and all throughout the water columns of our oceans today.
And I've read also that by 2050, they think there'll be more plastic in the ocean than fish.
Yes, and that's because in 2010, Jenna Jambeck from University of Georgia had done a study, and some of these are estimates. They were based on some models. And back in 2010, it was estimated that there were probably about 110 million metric tons of plastic in the ocean. And we're putting an estimate of between 5 and 12, so they generally say 8 million metric tons of plastic into the ocean every year. So what that means, and it's hard to visualize because plastic is a lightweight object. So when you measure plastic in tons, the volume would naturally be very large. So this 8 million metric tons of plastic into the ocean a year translates to a garbage truck full a minute.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And by 2020, which is only a few years away, if we continue going the way we're going, which is, you know, take, make, dispose, there will be two garbage truckfuls a minute of plastic going into the ocean. And by 2050, it will be four truckfuls. And this is what brings us to the more plastic than fish in the ocean by the year 2050. And these may very well be conservative estimates, too. If you think of all the pollution in the ocean today, which is DDTs and persistent organic pollutants, they call like bisphenol A, industrial waste, and flame retardant chemicals, those are already in the ocean. And then plastics in themselves already have flame retardant chemicals, I should say, and BPA in them, As a matter of fact, when you're drinking out of a plastic water bottle, which is a number one polyethylene, if you look on the bottom of your bottle, it'll have a number one with the circles around it, the arrows. There are different types of plastics. And those plastics, if they're left to get warm for any period of time, will actually release those chemicals into the water that you're drinking. And we really don't know how far that water has, how far that bottle has come under what conditions. But some of the things that they put into plastics to make them more malleable contain those chemicals. So when plastics break down in the ocean, they're not only having a release of their own chemicals in them, but the chemicals in the ocean are absorbing onto these plastics. The chemicals in the ocean actually really gravitate towards plastics for some reason. A single plastic particle can absorb up to 1 million times more toxic chemicals than the water around it. Even though the research is new, there are very many concerned people, and a lot of people are working on this, and they're working as fast and as hard as they can because this is a very pressing problem. The Columbia Riverkeeper, for example, hosted a wonderful talk about some of the pollutants in the Columbia River with U.S. Geological Survey, two scientists from there. And it was mind-opening because they were talking about contaminants of emerging concerns and things that go into the Columbia River. And they were finding things like persistent organic pollutants, like I was talking about, and things from over-the-counter drugs like ibuprofen, bactericides like triclosan found in things like certain hand sanitizers going in. Of course, you have the fertilizers, things like synthetic musks and sunscreens, all of these things that we don't really think about that we pour down our drain or let into our water system. But all of these things have chemicals in them. They accumulate in the ocean. Eventually, the ocean's downstream from everywhere. The plastic goes there, too, for the same reasons. 80% of the plastic in the ocean, a lot of people might think it's from fishing or cargo ships and things like that, but 80% of it is from us, is from land.
Garbage.
Yeah,
and
garbage, litter, poor
mix. Obviously every country doesn't care, and I've seen pictures of places in Southeast Asia where they're just pushing out this rivers of garbage into mm-hmm. the ocean. I mean, yeah. It's unbelievable. Seems to be no care or concern. Just get it out of the way.
Yeah, and that's sort of what we do here, too, in the United States. We'll send all of our recycled plastics to China, and if China won't take them, if there's contamination in a bale, we'll turn that ship around using their dirtiest fuel on the planet, and we'll ship it to the next closest country that'll take it. What China does is they'll turn those plastics and they'll downcycle the plastics. These aren't when we say about recycling, we actually downsize and we use a lot of chemicals, and plastics can only be recycled so many times, and then when they're downcycled, they're changed into something else. But they'll have to add more plastics to the material that they're recycling to boost them up again. And they create nurdles, which are pre-production plastics, which are then about the size, less than the size of my baby fingernail, which are shipped back to the U.S. on cargo ships. The U.S. plastics industry will then put them into molds. And
start it all over again.
And it starts all over again.
So what happens, though, from what I understand, is that the animals that live in the ocean are beginning to mistake plastic particles for food.
Absolutely, yep. Of the 120 species on the IUCN's Red List of Endangered Species, 54% have either ingested or become entangled in plastic. It can cause starvation because the animal will think that they're full. Meanwhile, they're being robbed of nutrients.
So what kind of effect, now that we know how really awful it is, I think that we can understand that it's pretty awful. And how are the animals responding to this? What is happening to the ecosystem there?
you see all of these animals affected by whales, sea otters, dolphins, sardines, salmon, plankton. Plankton's eating plastic now. Filter feeders like mussels, crabs, all the seabirds, so many others. Earlier this year, scientists had gathered the first evidence that deep sea organisms are ingesting the plastic. Miles and miles away from any known, from any coastlines.
Deep.
And very deep, yep. And 31 beaches from Orange County to the Gaviota Coast were surveyed in 2015, and 95% of the sand crabs were found to have plastic. It's just little sand crabs along the beach. 99% of the world's seabirds will have plastic in their stomachs by 2050, along with that, more plastic than fish in the ocean. By comparison, in 1960, not too long after plastics were in large use, less than 5% of the birds had plastics in their stomachs. Here, our birds on the Northwest Pacific coast, the northern fulmars, have already ingested plastic, 92.5% of those. That's along our coast. We see them flying around, and they look fine to us. We don't see what's in them. You see, our eyes can't see what's really happening.
My hope is that younger people who are coming into this, and firstly, they love a challenge.
Right.
So how can we fix this?
We need to help them.
Absolutely. Need to encourage them, and we need to encourage them from the
time
that they're
very
little children.
And
let them know, firstly, by informing them and educating them as to the animals in the ocean, so that they actually have pictures of them in their minds, not these sort of amorphic stuffed animal kind of relationships with animals, but actually to understand who they are and how important they are to our entire planet. And from the very beginning, to want to help them, to want to make them better, to want to fix them, to want to allow them this freedoms of life. If we can get to the kids, because I really believe that that's where all education and change occurs, is like getting to the kids. So it means the teachers, it means looking at school programs, it's, you know, telling your own children, your own grandchildren, not just taking to the ocean and saying, isn't this cute and everything, but bringing it into their reality and making them feel responsible. Because responsibility is a choice of love. And we need to choose.
Every little choice we make has an impact.
And so if you say, I'm sacrificing these single-use cups and the straws and all that other junk that really is unnecessary to my life, and what I bring into it is a new sense of responsibility that every time I see a fish leaping out of the water,
you can feel good about it.
Yeah, that I am trying to help that animal have freedom in its life and live a life that it deserves. And people that believe in something higher than themselves, there can only be that responsibility to the creation, because you can't think of something higher than yourself and then treat it like an ashtray.
Maybe people need to fall in love with the ocean again. I mean, I don't care if you eat seafood or not, or if you get to go to the beach or not, if you ever get to see the ocean. But everybody is reliant on the ocean. It gives us every other breath we take. We're all inextricably linked to the ocean. Whatever happens in the ocean ultimately happens to us.
Well, bless your heart.
Thank you, Lisa.
Well, thank you very much, Lynn.
Thank you so much.
From Cry Me an Ocean Facebook page, environmentalist and ocean health advocate.
Thank you for being the kind of person who helps get the word out about this. It's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
It's huge.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you very kindly.
Thank you, Lisa.
You have been listening to Animal Gab Radio, written and produced by Aza Cody. To hear all our Talk with a Tail podcasts, visit the Animal Gab Radio page at coastradio.org. Thanks to Coast Community Radio for giving us the opportunity to share our views and information on air, and to all those who contributed to each program. Animal Gab Radio is taking a hiatus from monthly on-air programs, but is still available online at animalgabradio.com. There you'll find playlists animal pics, interview clips, and real food recipes. For comments and topic suggestions, or to get on our email list, animalgabradio@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Our world is at a crossroads. Human civilization takes an extremely damaging toll on nature. In less than 200 years, our disregard, negligence, and wanton destruction has wiped out entire species and left many others on the brink of extinction. We have sacrificed them for our own convenience and have no idea what the plastic, chemical, and radiation pollution will have on the future. The time is now to decide how much value nature has to us going forward, and whether humans really have the right to take precedence over all other life forms on planet Earth. Nature. Gotta love it before it's gone.
My silly seabird, no dreams can possess you. No voices can blame you for sun on your wings. My gentle relations have names they must call me, for loving the freedom of all flying things. My dreams with the seagulls fly out of reach, out of mind. I came to the city and lived like old Crusoe on an island of noise in a cobblestone sea. And the beaches, the stars paid a light bill, and the blossoms hung false on their store window trees. My dreams with the seagulls fly out of reach, out of city and down to the seaside, the sun on my shoulders and wind in my hair. But sand castles crumble and hunger is human, and humans are hungry for worlds they can't share. Seagull.